Welcome to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community. And One South Coast Chamber, right here on FM 95.9, AM 1480 WSAR.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Mike O'Sullivan. I'm the CEO of One South Coast Chamber on the Education Spotlight. And I'm joined today by my good friend Matt Roy from UMass Dartmouth. And good afternoon, Matt. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Always good to see you, and I appreciate you having me on the show. You know, before we move into content, I have to say that the last time I was here, I ran into Happy Heck, Hector Gauthier. And I think he passed maybe only a couple of weeks after I was on the show. What a huge loss for our community. Great guy.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of weeks before. And yes, we really miss Heck. And anytime you talk to any of the folks at WSAR, you can tell how much he's missed. And he's missed in the community. So thank you for that.
You know, Mike, today is International Women's Day, and so I invited the Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs from UMass Dartmouth, Kimberly Scott, to join us as well.
Well, welcome, Kimberly.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I have to tell you guys that this morning I got a text from our Vice President of Finance, Dorothy Vitello. Well, Matt, you might know her, but
yeah, I've met her a couple
Dot's
times.
Dot's been with the chamber like 45 years, and she's still not much older than me. But I got a text from Dot, and it said, "Just reminding you, it's International Women's Day, and even though we love you as a boss, you need to recognize it. Tell everybody, Happy International Women's Day." So I texted her back, and I said, "Happy International Women's Day," but I didn't say anything to anybody else. So when we're done here, I better do that.
You know, Mike, it just happens to be my good fortune that it's International Women's Day, because I had suggested that Dr. Scott join us even before I was aware that it was International Women's Day. But she's definitely going to add to the show today.
Matt always comes with such great foresight, right?
Well, Dr. Scott, and should I call you Dr. Scott?
No, please call me Kimberly.
Kimberly, I will do that. And please call me Mike. But I am I'm so happy that you're here. This way I don't have to talk to just Matt for an hour. But just kidding.
But well, yeah,
everybody loves Matt.
Yeah, well, I've gotten to know Matt a lot because he's been such an asset to the chamber and the community, particularly on our education committee. And there's so many things that he's done on our education committee that we will talk about. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So born and raised in Detroit, Michigan, and from a first generation family in that I'm the first to graduate from college. And, you know, I had the good fortune of having someone come into my classroom as a ninth grader. And that person was an educational administrator. And I'm like, I want to do her job, you know, because it was such an impact, the way she described her job, an impact on the community and on the children that the school serves. So it was something that I thought, this is something that I absolutely want to do. So I had the good fortune of going to Ashland College in Ashland, Ohio, after my parents relocated to Ohio. And that's where I got the bug for higher education. I started as a resident advisor and then worked my way up to a residence hall director. And that's how the career took off and really ended up working in virtually probably almost every office in what we call the out-of-classroom experience, whether that be career services or disability services. Also worked in multicultural affairs, admissions, enrollment, you name it. And so for me, I see the big picture in terms of how students come to an institution, the support that they need to navigate the institution, and then, you know, making sure that they get the experiences that are crucial for them to graduate from college and hopefully get into a successful career graduate school.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
And I think those are very noble, Noble points, and a great way to get into the higher education business. I think it means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One of the points about college today is that dropout rates seem to be growing. And so what kind of things are you able to do at UMass, or is UMass Dartmouth in general doing to try to retain those students?
So students come to us so differently than when I originally started out into this business. And so, you know, especially given the fact that we had the COVID, the pandemic, students have been behind computers for so long. And so we're really having to approach them differently. So our orientation programs, and actually it really starts with the admissions process. Our admissions process has changed so much. And so students not only visit the institution, but they have an opportunity to have these admitted student days, where we kind of talk with them about what it means to be a student. They get to feel what it means to be a student on campus. They navigate different aspects of it. And then we pull them into orientation. So orientation is where our orientation leaders will connect with students most immediately. And if you're not using an app, i.e. social media, or putting them into WhatsApp, Fizz, or whatever there is out there, every time I learn one, there's a new one I have to learn. And so, you know, what we do know is we have to stay consistently engaged with them. So they're on not only a Snapchat or WhatsApp group, but they also might be in an Instagram group, or, you know, they might be in an orientation leader's personal group that they've established into the system. And so for us, it's about getting them connected early, making sure that they stay connected and that we're able to immediately answer their questions. Once they arrive to campus, there's so many resources that are available to them, from supplemental instruction to, you know, those resources that might be a mentor that's established with their orientation class. Each of them have to take a one-year orientation experience. And so they're connected with a faculty member and a peer mentor for that first year, which I think makes a significant difference for the students. And so, again, it's about getting them connected, making sure they stay connected, and also that they find the resources. So we've always had, I think, a multi-literacy center that helps with tutoring. There's also College Now for those students who have some challenges in terms of being able to go directly into academic programs. It's a specialized program where they also get the same support, with the exception of they also have another college advisor who meets with them on a weekly basis. So I think that UMass Dartmouth does a great job trying to provide as many supports to students. We just have to have students who are willing to take advantage of the resources that are provided. And so we're having to teach them how to navigate the university experience. You know, where we might have been those inquisitive students that walked in looking for everything that was available to us, these are students that, you know, are sometimes waiting for the resources to come to them. So that's where we have to pick up sometimes and do that personal handholding.
You know, Mike, let me jump in here. And Kimberly could probably say more about this particular topic than I can, but the other key aspect that is leading to a lot of students dropping out of higher education is the financial situation. Mm-hmm. And so we do a lot right from day one. Mm-hmm. Almost every student at UMass Dartmouth gets some form of financial assistance. But we're also doing a lot in terms of coaching the students and how to navigate the FAFSA form, for example.
Absolutely.
And other aspects of financial aid.
Yeah, and so much of that conversation, again, starts in the admissions process before they're even admitted. We do prepare a prospective financial aid award. And obviously, we spend a lot of time talking with the students and the parents about how to navigate their finances and what resources are available to help them. And again, I think that with people like Matt, the chancellor, our institutional advancement folks, they work really hard to ensure that they're getting additional dollars to support students. We've got emergency funds, specialized funds that come from our donors, which are sometimes alumni, and of course, they're corporate donors. And so not every student qualifies for, you know, some of those funds, but there are funds that we can tap into. And so we work very closely as a team to look at each student's picture in terms of what their needs are and to try and support them where we can. Are we able to help everybody? No. But the reality is we're helping quite a few.
And this is actually a particularly stressful year for most prospective students because the federal government has changed the FAFSA form. And so academic institutions right now don't know yet exactly how much aid each student's going to get. So prospective students are waiting anxiously to find out how much aid am I going to get from different schools in order to make the decision where they're going to go.
However, UMass Dartmouth has prepared those prospective packages so they have a better idea because, you know, we've worked hard to recruit the students and they deserve an answer. And so our enrollment management team, student services team, has prepared a prospectus that kind of gives them, here's what you might expect to receive. So we think that's going to be helpful. And then, of course, we're hosting these conversations, financial aid conversations, to ensure that they can talk with someone because we can keep them connected and make sure that the aid gets in. We're anticipating that by May 1, we'll be able to give them a real package. But again, it's kind of the situation where we're waiting to hear what they're telling us with regard to financial aid. So,
yeah, financial aid can be super, super stressful.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that with our three kids, and it was just really, really hard. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back. This is Mike O'Sullivan with Dr. Kimberly Scott.
Just Kimberly.
And Matt Roy.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community, and One South Coast Chamber.
Welcome back. This is Mike O'Sullivan. I'm joined by Matt Roy and Dr. Kimberly Scott from UMass Dartmouth. And Kim, tell me, people often talk about educating the whole person. How does student affairs help to complement and build off the academic learning that happens in the classroom?
I think this is the best part of the job. It's the job that Matt and I do on a regular basis. We've got about 15 different departments in student affairs, but not to mention there's also academic departments that work with our students to ensure, you know, that they're having a great experience. They partner with us to create different programs. I think the offices that, you know, work really uniquely with students are obviously Matt's office with the service learning and the community service. And then if you think about, you know, our career services, it's integral to the student experience coming on board. We try to do this jumpstart program so that they are immediately immersed in, you know, that developmental aspect of learning, you know, what their career interests might be and also researching how they get into those specific careers. I think residence life and housing is another area where we see our students engaged and supported by academic departments. We have partnerships with, I think, the engineering program where we have a women in engineering learning program, living and learning program. So about 30 to 40 students will live on a floor. They'll have academic and social programs and other programs that they'll participate in. We've got some other areas that are, you know, quite interesting. I think our biggest and most successful program that is a living and learning community is the Society of Gamers. We just recently stood up a esports program that was funded by a donor that, you know, handles esports technology and other things, as well as our university invested some dollars as well. And Matt was integral, I think, also in getting us funding, I think, maybe, in supporting that esports center. So, you know, it's just we look at who are our students and what do they like to do as opposed to the traditional program. So we've also expanded our Center for Religious and Spiritual Life. The programs that come out of there, I think we've got five different ministers who are participating. And, you know, it could be Jewish student life, Muslim student life, it could be Catholic students. There's all sorts of programming that is specifically dedicated to that student. And again, for us in student affairs, we have to partner with academic affairs because it doesn't work if there isn't a partnership. You know, the reality is they got the power of the pen. They can encourage students to attend the programs. You know, we have to get to know them and socialize with them and drag them to the programs in some cases. So we really like working with our students. But again, 15 different departments. We got a growing number of veterans on campus. And so, you know, we not only work with departments on campus, but we work with other colleges to recruit those students. But we host different programs to support our veterans once a month. We have lunch with the veterans ones that are faculty, staff, and students, but we also provide, you know, coaching that might be related to, you know, some of the difficulties they have in terms of transitioning to the college. And I guess the other department that I would highlight would be the counseling center. Counseling, you know, all of our students are coming with their own specialized needs. Many of them, you know, in some cases come with a counselor in tow, and that's not a bad thing. It's really creating the partnership between that counselor and our university counseling center to support the students. ADA services are huge right now in terms of working with our faculty to ensure that the students who need extra time for testing or who may need, you know, someone to assist them with note taking or any other thing. So there's a variety of resources to help students, and, you know, so many students really just learning how to navigate the college experience. So that's kind of why we have those huge orientation programs. And this year we're starting something a little bit different. Orientation used to be a 2-day deal, and now it's a 1-day. And so we're doing some other things that will help to retain those students and help to get them involved immediately before they come on campus. So we'll be doing a summer immersion program that will be a combination of academic and outdoor immersion, so they get a sense of what the South Coast is about. So
I really loved Kimberly's response, because it basically categorized all the different opportunities that exist on a college campus to get involved. I think the key is, and it's more of a challenge now than it was, say, 5 or 10 years ago, is to get students out of their room, mm-hmm. and to get them interacting socially with their professors to do well academically and their peers to do well socially. And I think that part of the success with living on a college campus, which is maybe a little bit different for folks that commute, is that they do have to navigate a living experience with a bunch of different people in a residence hall. So there's learning, there's social learning that happens there. There's also some pain and suffering that happens there, right? I mean, you get the wrong roommate, or you're not comfortable with the folks that are on your floor because they're loud in the evening, whatever it might be. There's opportunities for growth on a college campus, some of which are very positive and some of which are less than positive.
Yeah, and I think you see the most visible of our activities is athletics. And so our athletic programs have grown significantly. And we have a lot of winning teams, so we're appreciative of that.
Well, I'm a big college athletics fan, so I'm all for.
Yeah, but what school?
Villanova.
Yeah, I was going to I almost took a dot and threw it at Villanova, but I wasn't 100% sure.
No, that's it, but, you know. Hey, they're not doing so well this year.
There's not a lot of Villanova fans in this region.
No, and you know, my wife and I went to the Villanova PC game on this past Saturday, which, by the way, Villanova won, just in case anybody wanted to know.
Here we go.
There was not a lot of Villanova alumni there. There's not a lot of alum. There's some, but it's not an enormous number. But
not to get too far off topic, but will they make the NCAA tournament this year?
I really don't think it's going to happen.
Okay.
They're 17-13. They have some great wins. They have some crazy losses. But I don't think a team with 13 losses is going anywhere. And it might be 14. They play Creighton tomorrow. So
the Big East is really strong this year, though. So who knows?
It's very strong in its own way. It's very, very strong. But anyway, Kim, one of the areas you mentioned was the Society of Gamers. Now, I have, of my three children, the two youngest are 28 and 32. The 32-year-old is actually a parent now. But you put those two in a room, and they don't see each other that often because one lives in Dallas and one lives in Philadelphia. But you put those two of them in the 32-year-old's home, and
Don't see him for a while, do you?
No, and the only thing you hear is who's winning in Mario.
All sorts of screaming, right?
Yeah. The only report you get is who's ahead in Mario. And it's just, you know, and they're 32 years old. But I will tell you, when the 32-year-old was in college, and my younger son, there was one night he was down the basement, laughing at home, having an absolute ball. And my wife and I was like, Kev, what are you doing? And he says, "Oh, I'm playing whatever game it was." And he was playing. He was playing a game. I said, "Well, who are you playing with?" He says, "Oh, I'm playing with Mike." "Mike? Who's Mike?" "Oh, Mike is my other son's roommate." And they're playing because you could play online, and you're playing the games, and you do. You know, you're doing all these things. So, people criticize, and I think to some degree, rightfully so, that the kids get lost in that. But there are like you could still have fun, and there's still a lot of camaraderie in the midst of it. So my point is, and it's a long-winded one, which I know I can
be. It's a good point, though.
But my point is that if you meet the kids on their platform, it can really be great for the kids. Like, don't just say, "No, we don't like that." And I think that that's something great that you guys are doing.
We learned earlier on, I think it was I started in 2022. And we used to see these students just sitting out in the middle of the second floor of the McLean Campus Center, less than about 30 of them that were at the time, and they were just gaming. And so we said, okay, let's watch this for a while, and then eventually it became 60. And so now we have over 150, it might be close to 200 now that wow. are participating. And they don't just participate regionally. I mean, NACE is the National Association for College Esports. And so they can compete nationally, regionally. And so our students do relatively well. They usually place in the top 5%.
But you know, all of life is in the balance, right? So it's also making sure that you're dedicated to your academics. I mean, part of what we're trying to do is to find the students' passion outside of the classroom such that they will develop a network of other students and sometimes faculty and staff that share that same passion. But I'll tell you a quick story of pain, which is my eldest son, who is 24, did bang-up job his freshman year at Bridgewater State, and then he went back his sophomore year, and first semester he got a 0.0 because he was addicted to video games and never went to class. Now, he's so smart. He's doing fine now, by the way. He's back up at Bridgewater, but he's so smart. He was studying business. I'm a business professor by trade, and I took him to dinner three times that semester, and he BS'd me through those three dinners how he was doing in certain classes. But my point is, and it was a little bit of a long-winded point, is that, you know, while we want the students to find a passion outside of the classroom, the primary focus has to be doing well in the classroom.
Yeah, and we do track their performance by group. So we know as esports, you know, their grade point average is blank, blank, blank. And so we know how they're doing, and they're doing well. They typically are the game design students, the computer design or science students, electrical engineering, people who are interested in designing games themselves. So there is this partnership between the College of Engineering and then also between the College of Visual and Performing Arts. Our goal is eventually to get it so that the students are testing their games as part of the esports program, but we're ways off from that. But you know, there are these connections that are natural.
But you know, when those natural connections happen, things that you think are far off are not so far off.
I think I'm thinking by the fourth year we might be there. This is year two, so
George Orwell, right?
Exactly. Thanks, Matt. No, I think your points are very well taken, Matt. I mean, I'm a student who should have, you know, my kids will say to me, you know, "What do you regret?" And I'll say, "What I didn't take advantage of all of the opportunities that were right there, right in front of me when I was in college." And if I, you know, I don't regret a lot, but I'd do that differently, for sure. We need to take a break.
When we come back, can I talk about regret for one moment?
Certainly.
Have you ever wondered if your health could be restored without the use of dangerous drugs? Have you ever realized that the rates of poor health, sickness, and disease just keep on rising? This is Dr. Ross Rutkowski. I'm a doctor of chiropractic and a wellness advocate. I've helped hundreds of people in our community over the past 20 years, and I'd love to help you. Tune in to Total Life Conditioning every Thursday from 1 to 2 and learn how you can take control of your health.
Stay healthy and well-adjusted. Rutkowski Family Chiropractic.
Rutkowski! Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Their recruiting professionals use proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, they know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
At PrimaCare, we're out to make sure your health care is all about you. We're your partner in your health care, offering the full spectrum from primary care to specialty care. It's care that is sophisticated as you need and as personalized as you deserve, without going anywhere else. Keeping you healthy is our continuing mission, but we'll also by your side for chronic conditions and those unexpected illnesses. You can always trust us to provide excellent local care from our staff of 160 medical professionals. We've been by your side for more than 25 years. Make it a point to trust your future care to us by visiting us at prima-care.com. It's not complicated to get the best health care in town.
The Boys and Girls Club of Fall River believes that every child in his community should have a safe place where they can learn, play, and grow. And using the full extent of their powers, they assure that their members will complete high school and have access to a post-secondary education. They do this by providing a safe place for children to play, discover, learn, serve, and dream, modeling caring, responsible, and productive behavior, helping 100% of their members graduate from high school, and assisting them with college awareness, and efficiently using their resources, both human and capital. And so for these reasons, the Donald J. Medeiros Insurance Agency is proud to announce that the Boys and Girls Club of Fall River is March's Organization of the Month.
Donald J. Medeiros Insurance is teaming up with 1480 WSAR to highlight an organization every month. Visit WSAR.com and click on the Organization of the Month award logo for complete details. Donald J. Medeiros Insurance and 1480 WSAR want you to live better in the South Coast. Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community, and One South Coast Chamber.
Well, Matt, as we went to break, we were talking, I had just talked a little bit about regret, and you said you want to finish up on that point.
Are we back on?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Earlier, I was speaking about balance and making sure that students also focus on their academics, right? So my biggest regret in college is actually that I was too focused on my GPA. So I had like a 3.95, and I signed up for a piano class. Now, those of you who know me know that I'm hearing impaired, so taking piano was an extreme challenge. And I had a young, very dedicated instructor who was working with me, but about one third of the way through that class, I realized there's no way I'm getting an A in this class, and it's gonna hurt my GPA. So I jumped out of the piano class and into a music appreciation class, which was an easy A. But boy, I wish that I could play at least chopsticks today, and I can't. So again, it's a balance between the academics and social, and not all of one or all of the other.
You know, when I was a kid, I played the drums. I was not very good, but I played the drums. And, you know, at some point in high school, I stopped, and I got to college, and one of my best friends today he's played the drums in college. He still plays the drums. And then a couple of years ago, we went to his son's wedding, and the son has some of his buddies that were in the wedding were playing a band, and they all got together, and they had my friend, the father of the groom, play the drums. They played Bachman Turner Overdrive, Taking Care of Business. And let me tell you something.
That's awesome.
And like at the time, in your late 50s, to be up there, the father of the groom, you know, just just jam it away, playing. I was saying, I wish I could do that.
Yeah, thanks for reinforcing my regret, Mike. I appreciate that.
Well, you know what? You're never too old.
That's what they tell me.
You're never too old. So you should take care of that. I'm sure there's got to be somebody at UMass that can teach you to play.
We have a music program.
Yeah,
we do,
see?
Yeah, we have a music program.
So what are you waiting for?
Yeah, I don't know, Mike.
Time.
I do want to comment on the fact that Kimberly's working three phones
all
while
right.
we're on
Why
the radio
do we
here.
Why have to share that point?
Wow, three phones.
One is my personal, one is the emergency phone, and the other one is the work bat phone that, you know, the chancellor has to call on. So, yeah.
Well, if the chancellor calls, just give it to me. I'll take care of it.
Absolutely.
There we go.
Gladly.
I'll try not to get him too upset with you. Well, you know, we are really having a great conversation. But here's a question for you. See, UMass Dartmouth, it really is quickly becoming a minority-majority mm-hmm. campus. And how do you make everyone feel welcomed and valued on your campus?
So that took a minute. You know, I've been in higher ed for like 34 years, and this campus is really different in that, you know, 37% of our students are students of color or different race and ethnicities. And so it was understanding that, you know, they're not your typical domestic minority students. These are students who might be a second generation, you know, immigrant, or, you know, parents were born in another country, but they were raised here, but they've been kind of managing life for the family. And so, you know, they fought and they've struggled and they've made their way to college. And so once I learned who our students were, it became a little bit more easy to focus on how we tackle, you know, some of the issues. But it is important for me that we're not just looking at them as a separate population. We had to figure out, how do we integrate them into the community? Are we there yet? No, but we are doing much better than where we were. So again, I think it starts with our recruitment process and then going into orientation there in those groups. Our Frederick Douglass Unity House and Center for Spiritual and Religious Life, and also the Center for Women, Gender, and Sexuality, they call students over the summer. They have students that they hire and make those phone calls to connect with students. They call the current and the return new students and really just talk about expectations and or resources that might be available. So they're always connected, because the big thing is making sure there's a connection to a person, whether that be a student, a staff member, or a faculty member. Now, ultimately, we want them to be connected to faculty and also, you know, to a student. The other thing I think is important is that the programs that come out of those areas are critically important, because they're developed by the students, you know, so it's things that they're interested in. And so at the Frederick Douglass Unity House, life picks up at 6 p.m. and goes until 11 p.m. Weekends are very busy. And the cultural programming that they do, they open it up to students. And so students are just getting to the point, if they don't fit into the same race and ethnic group that sponsors the event, to where they feel comfortable coming to events. So we spend a lot of time trying to work building those relationships, so that, you know, it's not just this group over here doing their thing, but something that's open and available to all students. And so I think we're getting there. You know, maybe another year or two, we'll start to see more of that integrated intercultural experience that will make the difference for all students. Because it's also the issue that, you know, students who are not in what we call, you know, minoritized groups may not feel comfortable walking up to someone who doesn't look like them. So again, we have to create those intentional experiences that make a difference for all of our students, not just, you know, the students that are in the groups that we would consider at some point underrepresented.
Mike, I recall in the first segment, one of your questions was about retention.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the successful retention strategies is to get students involved in different activities. Mm-hmm. The diversity on our campus, which is relatively recent. Now, I've been at UMass Dartmouth for 23 years now. It's only in the last 6 or 8 years that we've seen this diverse population growing exponentially. It makes my job a lot easier. The two primary areas that I shepherd at UMass Dartmouth are community service, and we send those students out working with youth in our community who, by and large, are diverse. So our students are they become mentors or something for the younger students to actually emulate. The second part of my job is overseeing the Career Center, and employers today are very eager to come to UMass Dartmouth, which again was not the case, you know, 8-10 years ago, partly because of the diversity of our population.
And, of course, we've got great academic programs that are doing extremely well and have placed, you know, pretty well in terms of rankings these days, College of Business, Engineering, Nursing. So we're seeing more students that are going into those programs. And so I think that makes a difference as well, because the different programs have specialized programs designed to support students of color or race and ethnic populations. And so we see, for instance, nursing has started the Black Nurses Association, so they do specific programs for that group. They've grown the number of men that are in nursing. So again, it's targeted programming that is designed to get at students feeling like they belong and are part of not only the community, but the academic program, and that they're also connected to alumni. So I think we've done much better in terms of engaging our alumni on campus, and they're becoming part of our retention initiatives as well.
That's all good stuff, because it really relates to how do they get jobs. Mm-hmm. Because the more and more employers are so interested in the diversity, but not just diversity, but the equity and the inclusion part of it as well. You know, whether it's, you know, no matter what type of challenges an individual may have in their life, it's not just race. It's all of those things. And so, you know, when you handle it the way you're talking about, it's really prepping people, you know, to get into the workforce, but more, you know, but in many cases, it's hard for people who are in their late 50s and early 60s to actually change to work with a more diverse workforce.
To learn piano, Mike. Now,
might be harder to learn piano.
Let me come to your point, though. So one of the things that we're focusing on is seeing that our students get real-life experiences before they graduate, be them through faculty embracing service learning, so real projects that are benefiting the community but also challenging the students' knowledge, skills, and abilities, or internships. Mm-hmm. Now, the national data shows that if a student has an internship while in college, they are 50% more likely to have a job offer upon graduation. And that first offer will average $15,000 more. Yep. The very first job than a student that hasn't had an internship. So engaged learning, internships are clearly one of our strategies, because we know it leads to student success upon graduation.
And I think we have one of the highest placement rates. I think we have the highest placement rate, even beating Amherst in some respects. I think it's about, 90 to 93%? Might be 98%.
COVID, we were at 98%, but the last class was 95%.
Which isn't bad.
That's fantastic.
Either gainfully employed or in grad school.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of that great director of the Career Center that you have there?
Oh, yeah.
Jen Vincent?
I'm going to let you say that.
Here we go.
You killed me last time for bringing
Wait
it up.
Wait a minute. The two of us hired Jen Vincent.
Well, you get a lot of credit in my book. And Dr. Douglas may not be happy, but I'm sure actually she was very happy for Jen. But, so we're going to take another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about First Gen.
Welcome back to the Education Spotlight with Mike O'Sullivan, CEO of One South Coast Chamber. Presented by Bay Coast Bank, providing exceptional service and solutions for our community, and One South Coast Chamber.
Mike O'Sullivan, and we're back with Matt Roy and Kim Scott. And I want to ask you, we started the conversation, you mentioned being a first-generation student. And I know first-generation students are really near and dear to Dr. Fuller, mm-hmm. Chancellor Fuller. Can you tell me about that? And what do you do to help increase their success rates?
Yeah, I think it's near and dear to quite a few of us on campus. We haven't really quantified it yet, but we believe that there's a significant number of faculty and staff who are also first-gen. We started this past year tracking, actually probably in 2022, tracking our first-gen students. We have what we call the first-gen organization that a student started last semester. And Shelley Scott, who's our Associate Dean of Students, actually manages our first-gen population, along with our academic advisors and the Associate Provost for undergraduate education. Clearly, our job is to teach them how to navigate the university. The biggest hurdle, as Matt said, has always been finances. And I think the second hurdle is understanding the basics. You know, like nobody, and I think this is probably something every student has to deal with. You know, mom and dad or somebody washed your clothes. You got to figure it out. You got to figure out how to do your own health care, you know, because somebody else was doing that in some cases. And then in terms of first gen, just some of the topical areas for college ends up being difficult. And if your parents didn't go to college, then who do you turn to for support? And that ends up being the resources that are on campus, you know, whether it's the Multiliteracy Center, the STAR Center, or any of the other, the STEM Lab, which is designed to support those students. And so it's really getting them to connect early on. We know that if we can get them in the first, you know, 4 to 6 weeks connected to the resources on campus, that they have a better chance of doing well on campus. We have a National First Gen Day. I think it's always in October, right? And so the campus as a whole celebrates our first gen students. And so again, our goal is to make sure, again, the focus is on engagement, first connection, then engagement, and then of course making sure that they're successful academically. So I think that, you know, one of the things that we're talking about is, again, tracking to see how well those students are doing, you know, from enrollment to graduation. So we know that we have to focus on the retention of these students. So again, I think that's all of us trying to figure out, again, what's the best way to support them. And we've got some things in the works that work well, but clearly there's some other things that we need to add. And I know you got something you want to add. Definitely community service. Definitely service learning. We've got a number of them going on. Something else that's in this area, alternative spring break. So a lot of people are shipping off. Some going to Florida for, what is it? Rehabbing houses or something like that.
Yeah, hurricane relief.
Hurricane relief. And we've got people going to Washington, D.C. for political engagement. We've got some folks that are in Guatemala again. I don't think it's the same place, though.
No, well, it's not Guatemala.
It's not yeah. So either way, they're out, and they're first-year students that are just trying to figure out, how do I help and support people? These are students with a sense of altruism. They want to do something that helps someone else. And so we think that that also is beneficial for retaining them on campus. So if we can get them engaged early on, we know they have a better chance of being successful and graduating from the institution.
So thank you, Kimberly, for mentioning the kind of high impact things that we do in my area. But the point that I wanted to make was that so we as faculty also read different things and have book discussions and whatnot.
Oh,
so
definitely.
I'm in this book discussion, which is about a faculty person that pretended to be a student for 1 year and went to classes and lived in a residence hall with students. And what were the like key takeaways from this faculty person? The title of the book is My Freshman Year. And one of the key takeaways were how international students experience higher education very different than American students. But that institution was not like our institution, which has, I don't know, maybe 40% first generation. Mm-hmm. And the insights that she gleaned from the differences in international students, during the book discussion with the faculty, I said, time out. You have to realize our first gen are also going through that same culture shock.
It is.
Folks at home have no idea what they do in college, and folks in college have no idea what their experience is at home.
Mm-hmm. That's a real good point.
That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. That really is a tremendous point. So young people are under a tremendous amount of stress these days. Mm-hmm. And you've talked about some of these supports, but can you elaborate a little bit more on what kind of supports that you provide for students' well-being?
Yeah, so I'm a huge supporter of anything that relates to the support for mental health, and also, you know, for students who are just kind of, again, figuring out how to navigate an environment that may be very different from their own. So our counseling center is, you know, filled with folks who have, you know, master's, PhDs focused on clinical or psychology or psychotherapy. And so we try to do our best to connect those students. We have care and advocacy. So faculty and students and sometimes staff will refer students to us and we'll follow up on those students. But there are a variety of services, but those are the primary two, in addition to a mental health day and mental health week with a variety of activities that are designed to get students engaged on the topic of mental health and how to best support each other and to refer students that they see that might be struggling that no one might know about. So I know we're on a short leash. So I'll just stop right there, but there's quite a bit we could talk about.
Mike, I just want one thing that I have noticed just recently, perhaps just this semester, is that our students are becoming less and less comfortable with social distancing. I think we're forgetting that we need to be apart, and I think folks are getting happier just to interact with other folks on a regular basis.
Well, I think that's great news because people need to be with people.
Indeed. Thank you so much. It's been great being on the
show
today.
Thank you so much, Kimberly. It's been great to have you. And Matt, thank you so much.